Lord, I don't concern me. It is these to see you, my deepest country days of time. Om agnatam inandasya jana jana sarvaya chakshus milatam jena tasmai shri virve namah shri chaitanya manavistam stapitam jena bhutale sayam rupakadamayam sadati sarpanandikam manchakapachubhyascha kripasindubhayavacha kutitanam bhavanebha vaisinam. Brahma had seen the most wonderful reciprocation or response to his attempt to test Krishna. He had seen unlimited Vishnu forms. Now consider what that means. Unlimited Vishnu forms. That means that each form of Vishnu himself is unlimited. So, Brahma saw that from this little boy Krishna had come unlimited forms that had the forms first of cows or calves and then cowherd boys and then had changed into unlimited number of unlimitedly powerful Vishnu forms. So that means that Krishna, his form is so powerful that unlimited forms, each of them having unlimited power, come to him. Now think for a moment of what that means. Think of something material. Think of a person. No matter how much money he has, he doesn't have unlimited money. And if he kept on giving out his money or spending his money, there would come a point where he has nothing left. Because this is the nature of something on the material platform. It is specifically limited. So, regardless of how big or powerful something or someone on the material platform is, he's limited. That means that he can have there's an ending to how much he has of anything. Everything in the material world, it has a beginning and it has an end. It has limitations. Now consider the difference between material and what Brahma saw. Chaitanya. Maybe you could... Chaitanya? That Brahma saw the expending or the emanating, the coming from Krishna, unlimited Vishnu forms. And each of those Vishnu forms were unlimited. It is like a person who has unlimited money producing unlimited people who each have unlimited money. And that's not possible, because there is no one who has unlimited money in this world. But Krishna is not of this world. And what Brahma saw, he was trying to measure Krishna by his own intelligence. Measure means circumscribe. He wanted to see the limit of Krishna. So he used his power to test Krishna, to see the limit of Krishna. And what he saw was the unlimitedness. He got a glimpse. He didn't see the unlimitedness of Krishna, because who can conceive or see or put within one's tiny, finite, small brain something that's unlimited? Try to think of what unlimited means. Think of what unlimited power means. We think of someone who is powerful, who can pick up a car. He would think, wow, he's powerful. But think of what unlimited power is. He could lift one car, 10 cars, 1,000 cars, 1,000,000 cars, a giga sextillion, what's the next one? Tera?
Zillion.
Huh?
Terabyte.
Terrible amount of And then but Krishna universes, not one universe. We look up at the stars, the skies at night, and we see practically a countless number of planets. But this is one universe, and countless numbers of universes come from Krishna. And that's just mama angsu tejo sambhava. That's an angsu, just a small fragmental part of Krishna's power that doesn't measure Krishna's power. It doesn't give us an indication even how powerful Krishna is. So Brahma, when he tested Krishna by taking away the calves and the boys, he got a glimpse of how powerful Krishna was. He didn't circumscribe Krishna's power. He didn't measure Krishna's power, but he got a glimpse of the unlimited. Just like if you go to the ocean and you look out over the ocean, something so vast, a particular feeling comes to the consciousness. Yes or no? Yes. Raj, is that true or not true? You get a feeling, it's somehow a mixture of frightening and making your consciousness peaceful and wonderful, because you get a glimpse of something vast. Ocean is vast. Something that you cannot measure with your tiny brain as you look at it. It's vast, and one realizes, one gets a glimpse of one's own insignificance. And somehow or another, even though it's somewhat frightening to understand our insignificance, it's somehow very reassuring also, because it is reality. So Brahma got such a, it was like a jolt, as if he had touched a live wire of 220 volts or more of electricity, and he was shocked. He got a glimpse of Krishna's unlimited power, and he fell down to the. And he was on his swan. He was a swan carrier, and he was stunned. He was shocked. Because there he was, thinking himself very, very intelligent and very, very powerful and able to understand so many things. Now, Prabhupada, in his purport, when he's describing how Brahma is thinking in this way, that, oh, I can understand everything, and then he gets a glimpse of Krishna, he doesn't point to Brahma only as thinking in that way. He points to all of us conditioned souls who tend to think, oh, I know so much, I don't need to learn anything from anyone. If anyone needs any advice, I know who they should come to. It's me. This is the arrogance, conceit, pride of every conditioned soul, every jivatma, baddha jiv in this world. There is, in just like Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, why is he unlimitedly powerful? Because that is his nature. So similarly, we are unlimitedly proud. Every conditioned soul is unlimitedly proud, even yes, unlimitedly proud. But the only problem with that is we have no reason to be proud. But yet we are so proud. So then Brahma, he was so shocked because he got a glimpse of what power actually was. And whatever little power that he had at that time, he saw it as just like a speck of dust compared to a vast, vast, vast desert, or a drop of water compared to the ocean. And therefore he fell down on the ground. Not on the ground, but he was stunned. He could not move. Just as much as if one gets a huge jolt of electricity, an electrical shock, he cannot move. He's shocked. So then as Krishna removed this vision of all the Vishnu forms and how they had come from him, then Brahma opened his eyes and he saw where he was, and where he was in Vrindavan. He saw Vrindavan by Krishna's mercy, because it takes Krishna's mercy to actually see the transcendental land of Vrindavan, which has which we see according to our consciousness, and we see Vrindavan to the extent that our consciousness is clear, and also to the extent that Krishna gives us the ability to see. And it's exactly like that with Krishna. And Prabhupada will mention points about this in his purport, that we look for the Supreme Lord, or we look for something greater, we look for truth, but we find truth or the Supreme Lord to the extent that he reveals himself to us. It is not by our power that we can understand the Supreme Lord, but to the extent that he reveals himself to us, we see him. So therefore, some people will see the truth in one way, as in one form of religious worship, and the others will see him, another person will see him in another way, and some people will see that the Absolute has no form, and others will see him in a forearm form, or others will see him in Visharup, in a universal form. They'll see, oh, and he, they'll actually realize these different aspects of the Lord by the grace of the Lord. But then the question comes, if there are so many different aspects of the Lord that are revealed to those, to many different people according to their own consciousness, many questions come to mind. One of them is, what happens if, what kind of consciousness would it take for the Supreme Lord to show himself completely or his full extent to someone? What type of consciousness would pull from the Lord that type of a revelation, a revealing of his true nature, full nature? And the answer to that is that no one can ever understand the full nature of the Lord. It's not possible, because we're always tiny. No matter how big our cup is, his existence is much greater. So then we shift the question to what type of consciousness would it take that he reveals everything about himself, to what type of consciousness would it take for him to reveal his sweetness to us to a great extent, something like that, or his beauty. Because we don't exactly see reality as it is. Everyone thinks that I'm seeing objectively, means I'm seeing things as they are. And if someone else sees the same thing and sees something different, we criticize them and think how foolish they are. But actually, everyone is seeing through their own consciousness. It's unavoidable. So then the question is, again, same question, what consciousness does it take that Krishna allows to see his beauty, his sweetness, or his power, or his frightening nature? Malanam Asanam, I can't remember the rest of the verse, that when Krishna walked into the wrestling arena in Mathura, I think it was 12 different people, the Bhagavatam explained, saw him in different ways. Same Krishna walked in, but according to their consciousness, he revealed different aspects of himself to them. And Kamsa, when he saw Krishna, he saw him again and again and again. But what did he see when he saw Krishna? He didn't see the same Krishna that the residents of Vrindavan saw with their love-soaked consciousness. When he saw Krishna, he saw, "My death has come." When the wrestlers, what was the name of one of the wrestlers? Another one? Mastika, another one? Chanura, Mastika, Sala, Toshala, and there's another one that's specifically named. Sala, Toshala, Kuta. Krishna, I think, or Balaram killed Kuta. Just by a kick, he kicked him. This powerful wrestler. Because Balaram and Krishna are unlimitedly powerful. And no matter how powerful these material wrestlers were, their power was limited. And Krishna, Balaram, and all those, and all Vishnu expansions, unlimited power. When Krishna was just a baby of 1 month, described in the 7th chapter of the 10th canto, before the killing of Trinavarta, they put him, there was a ceremony because Krishna had just turned over for the first time, because a child needs a certain amount of strength to be able to turn over. So when the child turns over for the first time, every parent feels so much happiness. So in the Vedic culture, there is a, because of the happinesses always are expressed in the Vedic culture with a festival and by giving. I feel happy, so let me make others happy. What a culture, what a consciousness is that? I feel happy, so let me make others happy. So they made, let me share my happiness. My boy is maturing, he's turned over, so let us hold a festival. So there's a specific sanskara that is held at that time when the child turns over. So when Krishna turned over, they brought him outside and they were holding a festival, and it was very hot in Braja at that time. So they took little 1 month old Krishna and put him beneath a very heavy cart to give him shade, so the strong rays of the sun would not disturb him. And then there was one asura, a demon sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna. Putana had been killed, and so this demon, who was called Sakatasura, he came and he thought Putana made the mistake of assuming a form, and therefore Krishna killed her. And I will just not take on a form, but I will enter into the form of this cart that Krishna is just below. And then when that Sakatasura entered the cart, because of the weight of this demon, the cart went down into the earth. It was heavy already, but when the Sakatasura entered the cart, it went down into the earth, and the plan perhaps was to crush Krishna. And then Krishna, he began crying. Now this point will come. Krishna began crying, and because he was on his back, he kicked. Now, how much power does the tender, so soft and tender foot of a 1 month-year-old child have? Because when they cry, they move their hands and they move their legs. But when Krishna did this, his tender, soft, pinkish lotus foot, it touched the cart. He kicked it. And the cart broke apart, and all the brass cooking utensils that were on the cart went flying. And there was a festival going on, and Krishna was being neglected underneath the cart, and suddenly all the utensils in the cart went flying. And they were made out of, not plastic, but they were made out of valuable metal, like brass, etc. And it all went flying, and it made such a huge sound when it all came down on all the metal pots and pans and utensils fell on each other. And then everyone looked around and saw what would happen. And they saw this cart that had been on Krishna was knocked over. And the brass utensils, heavy brass, were everywhere. And they came running over. Mother Yasoda ran over to protect her beloved Krishna because they were so fearful of Krishna. And Krishna killed the Sakata with his tender foot that had unlimited power, because Krishna has unlimited power in every situation. And that's what Brahma saw. When he first opened his eyes, he saw Vrindavan. And then in Vrindavan, he saw Krishna. But he saw Krishna not as a little tender 1-month-year-old child, but he saw Krishna as a little Poganda boy, a boy who was about 4 or 5 years old, but still just a boy. A 1-month-year-old child has no power. And a 5-year-old, 6-year-old boy, how strong is a 5 or a 6-year-old boy? Just undeveloped and mature physically. So Brahma saw Krishna still looking for the calves and the boys, looking around, where are the boys and calves? Just as he had, as if Brahma had taken them, but Brahma now knew. He had just seen that all these forms had come from unlimited Krishna, and there Krishna was appeared bewildered. But he had just seen that he was unlimited. And there he was acting bewildered. And he thought, Krishna is trying to bewilder me again. Just like he bewildered me by showing me his power, that unlimited Vishnu forms that each have unlimited power come from me. Now he's bewildering me by making believe he's an ordinary 5-year-old boy. So let's read the verse. But he saw Krishna. He saw Krishna in Vrindavan. After seeing this, then Lord Brahma saw the absolute truth. So he saw Param Satyam. This is the purpose of the Bhagavatam. Param Satyam Dhimahi. The end of the first verse of the Bhagavatam states. This is what the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam is. It's a meditation, Dhimahi, on the Param Satyam, on the absolute truth. So Brahma saw that absolute truth, who is one without a second. That means asama udha. No one is equal to him, and no one is greater than him. And all the Vishnu forms, he was their source. All the concepts of the Supreme Lord, of God, of Ishwara, Parameshwara, he was their source. So we saw him who was unequaled. He was one without a second, and who possessed full knowledge, just like he had unlimited strength, complete strength, the totality of all strength. He had complete knowledge, the totality of all knowledge, unlimited knowledge. And who he himself was unlimited. Okay, what three things did he see? Let's see, here's your examination. Raise your hand if you can remember one of them. You raised your hand. Very good.
Who he was himself unlimited.
He was himself unlimited. What does that mean? There he was, a coward boy, a little boy, 6-year-old, holding some lump of rice mixed with yogurt in his hand. His hand was holding something. So how could you hold something if your hand is unlimited? If, of course, like this microphone stand, it is limited. It has a form. Here's microphone stand, and over here, starting over here, the microphone stand isn't there. Starting at its edge, as its border. So Krishna had a border. You can't have a form without having a border. But Krishna had a form, and Brahma saw that form. And the form did have a border, because how could he be there as a coward boy, looking very, very beautiful, like a 5 or 6-year-old boy or 4-year-old boy? So he had a form, but it was an unlimited form. Now, try to understand what that means, and you can't. We can't. And that's what Brahma was confronted with. He was just had to accept the fact that what I'm seeing and what I've just experienced is beyond my power to understand. And therefore, he surrendered. What was the second one? He was unlimited.
His knowledge.
He had unlimited knowledge. That was the second one. That means he knows everything. What's the Sanskrit word for that?
Savagya.
He knows everything. Usually everyone thinks that, oh, I know everything. We'll talk about that. I know everything. And nowadays the children, they think, my parents don't even know how to properly use a mobile phone. Ha! I know more than them. So this is modern society. What was the third one? So what was the first one that Nitai Prabhu said? He was unlimited. Second, that he knew his knowledge was unlimited. Who remembers what the third one is? Which was the first one we said, which is the hardest one to remember. And I'm lucky I have the book in front of me.
His strength is unlimited.
He's one without a second. That no one is equal to him. And no one is better than him. And everything and nothing was separate from him. There is nothing in one sense, although he is a separate individual, there is nothing separate from him. Now try to figure out, put that in your brain, that he's an individual, but nothing is different from him. That means that we are not different from him. But yet we are individuals. So this is the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achintya Veda Veda Prakash. That everything is Veda Veda, simultaneously the same as Krishna, including ourselves, Vishishati Paraprokta Chetra Gyakyatata Para, that we are also an energy of Krishna. And to understand who we are, without understanding that we are an energy of Krishna, is an incomplete understanding of who we are. So therefore in Vaishnava circles, all the names that all the devotees have, they always have Dasa, because that puts us in relationship with Krishna. Who are we? We are Dasa or Dasi, we are Krishna's servants. So then Lord Brahma saw the Absolute Truth, who was one without a second. He saw him in his Bhagawan feature. Brahmati Paramatmati Bhagavaniti Sabyate. So, and then what did he see? This little boy who possesses full knowledge, who is the absolute truth, who is unlimited, and he was one without a second. And he was assuming the role of a child. Not assuming in the sense that he's not this and then he becomes that. But he was in the form and role of a child. And not only that, a child not in the highest even birth, not even a brahminical child like Lord Vamandev, but in the cowherd family. A cowherd family. Child in a family of coward men. And there he was, standing. This is what Brahma saw, all alone, with a morsel of food in his hand. And he was searching everywhere for the calves and coward boys. But this time, Brahma wasn't going to be fooled as he was previously, thinking that he knew better and more than this coward boy. Let me test him. He had just seen a display of Chris, of a small part of Chris's potency, and that was enough to knock him out, so to speak. So this time he understood. But this boy, even though he's making believe, he's looking for the calves and boys, and he doesn't, as if he didn't know where they were. Oh, where are my calves? Where are my boys? But this boy is unlimited. And there is no one in existence equal to him or better than him. And there is no one in existence who knows everything as he knows everything. And that he is unlimited, even though he's walking around searching for the calves and boys. Here is Prabhupada's purport. The word aghadabhudam, meaning full of unlimited knowledge, is significant in this verse. We didn't read the Sanskrit. The Lord's knowledge is unlimited. So if he was if his knowledge was unlimited and he went to the university, what grades would he get? When he would get, huh?
Good grades.
But his parents would always be pushing him to do better and still get a tutor for him to make sure he was first in class. But when Krishna went to Gurukul, he was first in class, actually. Because Sandipani Muni was teaching him and teaching Balaram. And every subject he would master completely the first time he heard it. So in 64 days, he mastered the 64 arts that he was taught. And Sandipani Muni, he was just so, to have a student like you is the perfection of me being a teacher. So he loved Krishna Balaram so much. And Krishna Balaram, they were so humble. Krishna, he so Srila Jiva Goswami tells one thing that's not showing Krishna's humility, but how the boys in school were taught humility. And then it shows, and Srila Jiva Goswami explains something that shows something else about Krishna. Because Krishna had gone to kill Kamsa and Mathura. He left Vrindavan to do that. And then he went to Ujjain, Avantipur. And then to teach humility, all the boys, even though Krishna was there as a Kshatriya, as a king's son, a warrior, all the boys would have to go out begging for food. And Kshatriyas don't beg. When Bhim went, Draupadi wanted one lotus flower, wonderful 1,000-petal lotus flower. And he went to a place very high into the Himalayas that was like a different realm. And there was some, he found a, the Manasiganga, which was guarded by, it was Kuveras. And it was guarded by so many yakshas, so many heavy personalities. And Bhima started picking these lotus flowers. And the yakshas said, if you want these lotuses, you have to ask permission from the owner. You have to ask him for permission. Otherwise, we're the guards. And Bhima said, I am a Kshatriya. I don't beg from anyone. Mm-hmm. This was the spirit. These people, especially Bhima, so powerful. And they fought in Bhima. Kill them all. So the Kshatriya is actually in Gurukula law. Anyone who goes to the court, they dress simply. Everyone is a servant. And they learn when they're young some proper behavior and manners and humility. So the way that the boys learn it, one of the ways is they would beg. So several of them would go together to the different houses and they would beg. So the boys were also taught another thing, and that was to see every woman as their mother. Just young boys. With that much affection and respect. So they say, oh ma, they would go to the door and call out something, oh we're begging, oh ma, we're begging. But Krishna would never say, oh ma, to anyone. Because then if he said, oh ma, he would, because ma meant Mother Yashoda. It would be too much because he was so far away. He was away from Vrindavan and his heart was breaking in that way. So he would, even though all the boys would say, oh ma, Krishna would never say it. Srila Jiva Goswami describes this. So the word agada bodha, meaning full of unlimited knowledge, because Krishna, when he learned everything, is significant in this verse. The Lord's knowledge is unlimited, and therefore one cannot touch where it ends. Just as one cannot measure the ocean. What is the extent of our intelligence in comparison to the vast expanse of water in the ocean? So to be confronted with how insignificant we are, just like when we go in front of the ocean, we are confronted with how insignificant we are. But there is actually a very pleasant feeling to understanding we're insignificant. It's fearful in the sense that if you're insignificant at any time, it can be finished. But yet, that is reality. Do you ever go to the ocean? Yeah. And you just look out at the ocean?
Yes.
Something satisfying in the heart?
Yes.
But you feel insignificant. So just imagine if we had a deep relationship with the ocean of knowledge, ocean of power, ocean of beauty, Krishna. We would feel insignificant, but we wouldn't feel fearful if we were his servant and he accepted us as his servant. We would feel so safe, so protected, and so happy. So one cannot touch where the knowledge of Krishna ends, just as one cannot measure the ocean. What is the extent of our intelligence compared to the vast expanse of water in the ocean? And then Prabhupada tells something personal. On my passage to America, what was the name of the boat Prabhupada went on? On my passage to America, how insignificant the ship was just like a piece of little piece of wood floating on the ocean, and if a big wave came, like a matchbox in the middle of the ocean. Krishna's intelligence resembles the ocean, but one cannot imagine how vast it is. The best course, therefore, is to surrender to Krishna. Don't try to measure Krishna. That's what Brahma tried to do, to find the extent of Krishna's power. He took his intelligence and just tried to see how Krishna would react when confronted with his great intelligence. And the result was that he became completely bewildered. The word adhyam means one without a second, meaning one without a second is also significant. Because Brahma was overcast by Krishna's maya, he was thinking himself the supreme. This is everyone in the material world is overcast. That's such an interesting word. Because when you think of overcast, what do you think of?
Clouds.
Huh? The weather in London. Yes. Clouds covering. Now, is it the sun that is getting covered, or is it our ability to see the sun? Is any cloud powerful enough to cover the sun, actually? No, it covers our eyes, our ability to see. So it is overcast. It's an overcast day. When you hear in the weather forecast, it's going to be an overcast day. Do you say, oh, how wonderful? I guess if it's very, very hot, if it's 40, 50 degrees, you may say it's how wonderful. But overcast by Krishna's maya. And because he was overcast, his consciousness was covered like a cloud covers our eyes, so we can't see the sun. It doesn't cover the sun. But because his consciousness was overcast, he was thinking himself the supreme. That is the effect of maya. In the material world, everyone thinks, I am the best man in this world. Except the Matajis are thinking, I am much better than the best man in this world. And the men are thinking, of course I'm much better than everyone else. It's Kali Yuga, of course. I know everything. So everyone is unlimitedly arrogant, proud in this world. But actually we're insignificant. But how quickly we become proud, even though something happens to us and somehow we're confronted with how tiny we are and how foolish we are, and how quickly we forget. How quickly. This is because our consciousness is overcast by maya. I am the best man in this world. I know everything. One thinks, why should I read Bhagavad Gita? I know everything. I have my own interpretation. Brahma, however, was able to understand that the Supreme Personality is Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna. Another of Krishna's names, therefore, is Parameshwara. What does Parameshwara mean? It's Parama. Ishvara. Now Brahma saw Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as a coward boy in Vrindavan, not demonstrating his opulence, but standing just like an innocent boy with some food in his hand, loitering with his coward boyfriends, calves and cows. Brahma did not see Krishna as Chaturbhuja, the opulent Narayan. Rather, he simply saw an innocent boy. Nevertheless, he could understand that although Krishna was not demonstrating, showing his power, he, was the same Supreme Person. People generally do not appreciate someone unless he shows something wonderful. But here, although Krishna did not manifest anything wonderful, Brahma could understand that the same wonderful person was present, just like an ordinary child, although he was the master of the whole creation. He was the master of the whole creation. He was the master of countless creations. He was the master of countless universes. He was the master of the spiritual world, the Vaikuntha planets. He was the master of Goloka Vrindavan. And there he was, standing right before him. Thus Brahma prayed, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Vajami. You are the original person, the cause of everything. I bow down to you. Vedeshu Durlabham. One cannot reach Krishna merely by Vedic knowledge. Adurlabham Atma Bhakta. But when one becomes a devotee, then one can realize him, because then Krishna reveals himself to the devotee according to the mood and extent of the devotee's love. Brahma, therefore, became a devotee. In the beginning, he was proud of being Brahma, the Lord of the universe, but now he understood, here is the Lord of the universe. I am simply an insignificant agent, servant. An agent. What does agent mean?
It works on me, behalf
of another. And nowadays, no one wants to be an agent unless he's a secret agent from a CIA or whatever. But everyone always ends up being a servant. Agent is a polite way to say servant also. That you have a master, you're accountable to someone, but everyone is always in that position. So Brahma, the topmost person in this universe, saw himself as an agent, merely an agent, but an agent of the greatest. Here is the Lord of the universe. I am simply an insignificant agent. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Vajami. And I worship that Lord. Krishna was playing like a dramatic actor, that he was wandering around as if he was still looking for the boys and the calves, if he didn't know who but Brahma had just seen the countless Vishnus manifesting from him. Because Brahma had some false prestige, thinking that he had some power, Krishna showed him his real position. A similar incident occurred when Brahma went to see Krishna in Dwarka. Raise your hand if you've been to Dwarka. Raise your hand if you've been to Vrindavan. You've been to Vrindavan? When did you go to Vrindavan? Where did you see Krishna Balaram Mandir? Did you see Krishna Balaram? Did you see Srila Prabhupada Samadhi? Did you see Sisi Gonatai? Did you see someone else who I can't remember who? Who are they? Radha Krishna. Do you know their names there?
Radha Shamsunda.
Yeah, and who else is there? There's Radha Shamsunda. And who else is on the altar?
Huh?
On the same altar?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we have to. What's your name?
Safirika.
Okay, we're going to have to show you a photograph very soon. Does anyone? Okay, everyone can take out their mobile phones and find their photographs of Radha Shamsunda. But I'll tell you right now, it's Lalita and Vishaka also. And you know who is also on Krishna Balaram's altar also? I'll give you a hint. Ma. Very good. So, a similar incident occurred when Brahma went to see Krishna in Dwarka. When Krishna's doorman informed Lord Krishna that Brahma had arrived, Krishna responded, "Which Brahma?" ask him which Brahma. The doorman relayed this question, and Brahma was astonished. Is there another Brahma beside me? He thought. When the doorman informed Lord Krishna, it's the four-headed Brahma, Lord Krishna said, oh, four-headed, call others, show him. This is Krishna's position. For Krishna, the four-headed Brahma is insignificant, to say nothing of four-headed scientists. Now Prabhupada is going to criticize four-headed scientists, what to speak of one-headed scientists. Materialistic scientists think that although this planet Earth is full of opulence, all others are vacant. Because they simply speculate, this is their scientific conclusion. But from the Bhagavatam, we understand that the entire universe is full of living entities everywhere. Thus, it is the folly of the scientists. What's another word for folly?
Foolishness.
Foolishness. It is the foolishness. And what kind of people exhibit foolishness? Yeah, fools. So Prabhupada is basically it's the folly. He's just, usually he would say rascals, but here he's saying it is the folly of the scientists that although they do not know anything, they mislead people by presenting themselves as scientists, philosophers, and men of knowledge. That's Prabhupada's purport. Why was Prabhupada so critical of the scientists? Well, he said why, but what was the real criticism?
They try to deny the existence of God.
Yes, exactly. With their little bit of knowledge, or they don't know anything, as Prabhupada said, they make such a bold declaration, there is no God. So therefore, Prabhupada was very... And people listened to the scientists. They are great authorities. So Prabhupada was very critical of little scientists who were arrogant. Rather, they should be humble. And that's what Prabhupada's conclusion actually was. Because after all, what do we know in this world? What can anyone know, no matter how great they are? What can anyone know in this? Like as Albert Einstein said, just like I feel like I am at the edge of the ocean, just at the edge, just looking at the sand. I cannot measure the ocean. I can just talk about a little bit on the edge. Okay. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Is it true that there's a million-headed Brahmas?
Why do you want to make hats for them? You afraid someone's going to ask you? Yeah, there's so many headed Brahmins.
Why is it a little scary to accept their insignificance?
Because then we see our powerlessness and vulnerability, and that's frightening because we can't protect ourselves, and no one else is going to protect us, so we're in a dangerous position. And that's actually the position of everyone in the material world. Precarious, like water on a lily leaf. And the lotus or lily leaf has a waxy surface. That's what Govinda does. So actually, this is reality. So it causes us to confront an aspect of reality that we're actually in a precarious position in this world. Padam padam yadvipadam natesham. It's a dangerous place. And we try to, so therefore so much of the endeavor of mankind is for security. Or another way to look at it is to gather an illusion of security. So that you can feel secure, but actually no one is secure. So therefore, in the Vaishnava tradition, especially the sannyasis, they Itansastaya paratmanistam abhyasitam purvatama maharsibhi. They follow the path of the previous acharyas, the maharsis, and that is by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Mukunda, the service of his feet. Tamo Mukundangli Nusevayaiva. So that is actually the path of shelter, and that's called, or in Bhagavad Gita says, Savadamam Pratyaja, of security. Yeah, but it's a conditioned response, isn't it? That here I am, so tiny and significant, so vast, it gives us a hint of our position in the universe as very, very insignificant, confronted with the greatness of existence. And yet we are proud. I mean, I shouldn't speak for everyone else. Pride and envy, oh, that just don't make any sense. But it's conditioned. Life is full of pride and envy, and therefore misery and fear. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling as a sannyasi, this was the verse that he accepted it, and he liked it very much. And therefore he would chant Krishna's names. Krishna, 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 Pahimam, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam, Krishna Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hey, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna. So he wandered all over South India, just chanting in ecstasy, the ecstasy of full dependence on Krishna while chanting his names. Ride stam kuru keshava. So Mahaprabhu was teaching and he was practicing what he was teaching. And he was ecstatic. So there are many lessons in this verse. Because you think about it, I ask this question, what when you leave your house, if you leave behind, what thing or what things do you feel very insecure?
Wallet.
Wallet? Yeah. And what has to be in the wallet? No money. Very old-fashioned. Money. Credit card. If you don't have your credit card, but even more than that, you need something else too.
Coffee.
Huh? Mobile phone. If you walk out without your raise your hand if you have your mobile phone with you. Okay. Just in case. It's like when I was in grade school, in like the third, fourth grade, there was so much fear of a nuclear war with Russia in the United States, in New York, USSR. There was so much fear. And so they would have drills in the school. It means that there would be practice in the school. Did they do that? In case there was a nuclear war. So that we were taught what to do in case we were bombed by a nuclear weapon. So that every once in a while the principal of the school would come on the loudspeaker and say, "Take cover." And we would hide under our desks. So if a nuclear bomb fell on us, we sure would be safe, wouldn't we? So that's like having your mobile phone with you. At least have my mobile phone, good thing. That was close. We can laugh at it if it were all. I also have my mobile phone. No, actually, I don't. What am I going to do? So this is called Durasraya. This is a false shelter. So we have so many false shelters in this world to give us security. But life is meant to develop our relationship with Krishna, such a trusting, loving relationship based on service, that we feel completely sheltered in him, by him. And then we could walk through the door of death, which is a very frightening occurrence. With the help of our friends, devotee friends, we can walk through that and go home. Okay, Hare Krishna. Good night, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for coming. So many kind devotees have given us their association.